Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Finally, that rain we've yes. all been waiting for. But this week, there's more heat, too. So what does it mean for your midsummer garden? We've invited Ohio's garden sage, Deborah Kanapke, to talk about that. Deborah is a blogger, teacher, author, co-author of five books on gardening, and an avid gardener herself, of course. She's with us today to answer your questions and cover the big gardening issues. Welcome back to the show, Deborah Kanapke.
Love being here. Looking forward to all these questions on how to save my dying trees.
What you really love is the air conditioning, right?
Actually, yes. It's this morning I went out in my garden. It was 72.9 degrees. It was so muggy. I was sweating, and all I was doing was
walking
checking
around.
Things out. I was like, whoa.
Now, let's talk about the trees, because I noticed out at the park near where I live, they've put all those big plastic bags around the younger gators last week, I think a lot of them went on. I guess they're deciding that we can't risk losing these trees,
especially the young ones, if they've been planted this year or even last year.
Yeah,
you need to protect those young trees by giving them slow, deep water. And I think I'll repeat that. Slow, deep water. A lot of people do this whoosh, whoosh thing on their trees and think that that's enough, and that just pulls the roots back up. So what those gators do is they let the water out very slowly. There are different size gators, and then they come back and refill them. So, yeah. What I recommend is when we have high heat is that you look at three times a week, taking the hose, setting the timer for 20 minutes, putting it on a trickle, 20 minutes on this side of the tree. When the timer goes off, 20 minutes on this side of the tree. And by slow trickle, I mean that when you put it down, that water is not falling off the area, but it's sinking down. And for this heat, I'd probably do a third 20-minute shot. So, and I do that three times a week for new trees and second year trees.
I think it's easy to forget. We just went through June. That wasn't August last month. That was June. We still have the rest of July and all of August to go through.
And September.
Oh, which has become hotter and drier all the time.
Has become a hot month. It used to be that, oh, I can smell fall. Now it's, end of summer.
A lot of weddings in early October these
Yes, there are, because September is hot. It's just hot. So, yeah, and this weather pattern, you know, the rain last night was fantastic, but it came in heavy and hard and fast. And so a lot of that, especially if you didn't have mulch or if you have hilly areas in your yard, that just ran off. So fortunately, I had my mulch down and things are just good. And we got, in that short storm, about an inch to an inch and a half.
In both bouts? Because we had two bouts with it.
Right. Okay. Well, that's why the first bout, I went out, I went out, and then we went out for the evening, and when I came back, I noticed there was more water.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm saying inch to inch and a half, depending where you were. And then we visited friends last night who were down in Circleville. They didn't get a thing.
See?
Not a drop. Well, actually, it drizzled. And so I said, oh, it's misting. And that was it when we were down there.
My guest is Deborah Kanapke, author and Ohio's Garden Sage. If you have a question or comment for her about gardening, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can email us at allsides@wosu.org. You can also visit us on Facebook and post your question or comment there, the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. So give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So even maybe trees, going back to the trees real quickly, that you put in last year.
Last year. They're going to stress.
Yeah, they're going to stress out, even though they look okay right now.
You will notice stress. I mean, look at the leaves. If they look like they're hanging, like the petioles are down, when before the leaves were up, I mean, that's a clear sign.
And my hydrangea do that every day, but we're not talking about drama queens. We're talking about trees here. Okay,
For an example, I have a service berry that's 7 years old, and I watered it. I did three 20-minute sessions around, you know, the thirds of the trunk, about 3 feet out from the trunk.
Okay.
Because it's a more mature tree, so its roots are out here.
Okay.
And it needed it. It was flagging, and I was getting some fall color which is a sure sign that the tree's letting go of some leaves because it can't hold on to them anymore. So if you have leaf drop and it's not due to a disease or a bug and they're flagging, that means that tree needs help. Now, it's harder when you have these big, huge, majestic oaks and maples. What do you do?
Mm-hmm.
It's really hard to give them enough water. You have to decide how much of a water bill you want to pay and how much you want to cross your fingers that you'll get rain like we had last night.
Would you then just do a sprinkler over to get the area of the tree if it is a big tree?
I'm concerned about the sprinkler thing because of the evaporation.
Okay.
Now, if we have a really humid day, it's not evaporating.
Nothing's
like
evaporating out there today, people.
But if it's a dry day, you're losing a lot of that water to the air, too. You can use a sprinkler, but I'd put it on real low and move it around the tree and let it slowly let that water go in. You put too much water in, it's just going to fall away from the tree.
Okay.
Yeah.
Natalia in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a formidable sized garden, and we just moved into the area last year, and there's a lot of trees around, so we've got a lot of pests. I noticed squash bugs, and I was trying to look up ways to get rid of them without pesticides. Do you have any suggestions?
Well, she just smashed her hands together, Natalia.
I have done that. Squash bugs are tough once you see them.
What are they? Can you tell us anything about them?
These are the little green ones with the black dots.
They start out gray with black legs, and they're putting their leaves on the undersides of my squash and pumpkin.
Okay. I'm thinking of the cucumber beetle. I'm sorry, that's the green one with the black dots. Sorry, getting my bugs mixed up. Since it's a vegetable garden, there really aren't a lot of options, and I wish there was a squash bug trap. I don't know of one, but more traps are coming out with pheromones. I don't know, lady squash bugs or male squash bugs, pheromones. So look for something like that, although I don't think it's out yet. There was a product we talked about last time I was on the show, spinosad or spinosad, however you want to say it, which is a bacterial application which is okay for food crops. So take a look at that. You can get it at your local garden centers. Be careful of products though. Again, it's a vegetable garden, so you want to go organic. What I do is I look for them and I smash them. I also clean up all leaf litter because they may lay their eggs and they may be in that. And I also look for their eggs, which are, they'll be on the underside of the leaf, and I rub them off with or without gloves on. I've gotten so I don't need a glove anymore. And it's smashing.
It's just little bug eggs.
Yeah, it's bug eggs. And especially in the fall, clean up all litter and do not put it in your good compost pile. Put it in a bad compost pile or bag it up for it to be taken
away. To ask you, what do you do with a bad compost pile when it gets big?
Well, mine is big, and by the end of the summer,
Thank you, Natalia.
Yeah, yep. It will go down to nothing. I mean, it's just next spring, it'll be 1/4 its size it was, and then I build it back up, and all the organisms in the soil, whatever, eat it up, take care of it, and take it away. So, yeah.
Nancy and Marion, welcome to the show, Nancy.
Hello, good morning. We didn't get any rain last night.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It seems like rain's always to the north or to the south or to the east or the west.
Mm-hmm.
So my question is, taking care of my tomatoes.
Mm-hmm.
I have followed the instructions for deep watering.
Good.
Although, how much is deep watering? Can you, you get your little wand and you count how many times. Sometimes I count to 6 and then do it twice. Is that enough or is that too much? Or
no, I count to 100.
Okay. I'll tell you what I do.
Whoa.
And then, everyone has their own way of watering.
Right.
But my tomatoes, I have them, first of all, deeply planted.
Yes.
And they are in sort of a small depression area with hills on either side. So when I water, I fill up that area with my wand. I go down my rows, and then I do it again. I do it 3 times.
Okay.
And I filled up, watch it go down, And right now my tomatoes are looking pretty good considering the high heat. And tomatoes can deal with a good amount of heat as long as their roots are cool. So that's the other thing. Go out, get some straw, make sure there's something on either side of your tomato plants. I don't put the straw right up to the tomatoes themselves, but I keep the soil cooler by straw or hay in the vegetable garden, and then that goes down and becomes a part of your soil. One caveat with hay, you might get more weed seed than you do with straw.
I use compost, leaf, and manure and things like that. But
that's
then
good
my
too.
Next question is, since it's been so long between rains, how often should I be watering the tomatoes?
I do mine twice a week.
Regardless?
If there's rain, no.
Well, yeah, I meant without rain, just twice a week, and
deep.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
And is that sufficient, too, for the rest of the vegetables, like eggplant and green peppers?
Eggplant would probably take a little bit more, so you could do them three times a week, although I have to admit I only have so much time, so they all get watered on that two times a week schedule.
I understand that. By the way, how do you tell if an eggplant is ripe?
Color?
Well, color, I don't know. I kind of look at it.
There's
I
a
feel
thump
if it's,
to it.
There's a thump, and if it's heavy and it feels good in my hand and not mushy and not too hard, if you feel an eggplant in the store, think about that and then feel your eggplants in your garden.
So does it get heavier and more compact as it grows?
Not compact. I mean, you shouldn't be able to indent it real far. If you can indent it far, then it might have been there too long. But you don't want it rock hard. It's that in between. It's sort of that garden hand knowing. So
in the beginning or
when
late?
It's ripe.
When it's ripe.
So go to the store.
Yeah.
Feel the eggplant.
They should be ripe in the store.
Yeah, they should be ripe in the store.
Okay.
That'll give you a good place to start.
Okay. All right. I appreciate the information. Thanks
so
much.
You're welcome.
All right, Nancy, thanks for the call. My guest is Deborah Konapke, author and Ohio's garden author, teacher, blogger,
gardener, grandma,
Ohio's garden sage. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, when your smartphone is your wallet. Swipe the phone, pay the bill. We'll look at life and cash in the age of mobile payment. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
Tom Ashbrook and On Point coming your way starting at 1 o'clock this afternoon here at 89.7 NPR News. Weather, hot and humid for the next few days, mostly sunny today with a high of 93, low tonight 71. On Tuesday, mostly sunny, tomorrow's high 94. By Wednesday, partly sunny, showers and thunderstorms are likely in the afternoon, and a high of 91 degrees. Right now, 87, and it feels like 90. As a basic member of 89.7 NPR News, you'll receive a one-year subscription to Newsweek magazine, our airfare program guide, the WOSU FYIE newsletter, and a WOSU grocery tote. Be a basic member. Visit WOSU.org.
Welcome back. My guest is Deborah Konapke, author, teacher, Ohio's garden sage. She's with us now to answer your questions about gardening, this midsummer gardening struggle we all have anyway, let alone when there's been such a shortage of rain and then torrential, not to mention the wind storms, which we haven't even gotten to yet.
The derecho,
because it's an E, so it's derecho.
And it's, I think it sounds Spanish.
Yeah, it is Spanish.
So it'd be derecho.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, just this crazy, crazy weather system. You got a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tom has emailed us and asks, He says, I love hollyhocks, but I have a consistent problem with them. They get bug-ridden, brown and brittle, and seem to dry out, even though they are watered regularly. Mm-hmm. And this often means they do not come back the next year. Last year, I planted 6 beautiful plants, and only 2 came back, and one of them has browned and died, with the second not looking so great either. Is there a secret to keeping them looking nice? Should I use 7 Dust or some similar product? Can you recommend something? She's shaking her head.
Okay, not 7.
Never 7.
But one thing that's going on, hollyhocks are Japanese beetle magnets. So mine have all been eaten by the Japanese beetles.
I know. Japanese beetles.
So, and the adult Japanese beetle is almost impossible to get rid of. So what you have to do is work on the grubs in your lawn, and I hope that your neighbors do the same. I use a 1-2 punch of milky spore and parasitic nematodes that love chafer bug and Japanese beetle grubs in the soil, the little white things that when you dig up, you find them. I also, when I dig up the grubs, put them in our bird feeders, and the blue jays and the woodpeckers love them.
The circle of life.
Yes. The other thing that's going on with your hollyhocks when they get brown is a hollyhock rust. What can you do about that? Not much. It's a fungus. You could spray, but is it cost effective? Not really. So what do? Hollyhocks, you can grow from seed, you can buy the plants, and by the way, they're biennial.
Oh.
The first year, they come up as a rosette. The second year, they bloom. A lot of times, we buy plants that have been selected for blooming their first year, so that kind of makes them more annual-ish. And what you want to do is, when they do make seeds, let them seed down so you get a new crop. And clean up all litter underneath, get rid of those rust laden leaves, and when you see Japanese beetles, just capture them, because truthfully, there's nothing you can put down that's really going to get to the Japanese beetle. You have to work on those grubs. So that means in the spring, late spring, you're putting down what you need, and I believe there's also a fall application that you can do with milky spore, but I'd have to look that up. And I will put the milky spore and parasitic nematode information on the Facebook page, Anne's Facebook page tomorrow.
Okay, Tom, check out the Facebook page, All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page tomorrow. Wesley says, I've planted 5-gallon hibiscus along my driveway and the section is shallow. Can I build up the dirt around the plants for them to survive?
Okay, so side of the driveway, hibiscus.
It sounds like it's a narrow.
A narrow area.
Planting area.
Now I'm wondering if it's a hardy hibiscus or if it's a tropical hibiscus. Darn. Okay, if you're talking about mounding up the soil, that will be fine, although you'll have a problem with the watering. The water will want to go away from the plant if it's mounded up. Unless you're mounding it up, putting some kind of barrier so the soil doesn't go away from that area, and then planting it in that, it's making sort of a raised bed. I hope I'm answering your question. For a tropical one, that means you'll be bringing it in. For a hardy hibiscus, if you're planting it there for next year, etc., make sure that you put in a lot of compost and you water it a lot. They do not like to dry out. And I hope that answers that.
Samantha in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Samantha.
Hi.
Thank you. Hi, I'm calling because my mama, when Dad was in the military, we lived everywhere. And my mama could cut a piece of a rose bush off, like a stem, and stick it in the ground. And she did it here. She's done it everywhere in the country that we live, and grow roses. How do I do that?
Okay.
It sounds like a miracle.
Well, it does. Because I can't grow roses when I go and buy them at the store and plant. So.
Okay. Well, basically what your mama did was what we call taking rose slips or cuttings and sticking them into the ground and make sure they keep watered. If you keep them moist, and this is new wood, not the old wood, if you keep them moist, they will sprout roots.
So you want to grab one of those shoots that come off, mm-hmm. that's nice and green and fresh.
Right. Okay. And make sure that, now, I bet these were old-fashioned roses that she was doing this with, not hybrid teas, because the hybrid teas don't make their own roots very well, don't live very well on their own roots. So pick shrub roses, old roses, etc. to do this, but what you're doing is putting a cutting in the ground. You can do the same thing by getting some potting soil and a pot and sticking in the pot, and that's a cutting.
Could you root them first in water?
I've never done that with roses, and I usually don't like rooting things, plants in water. I like rooting them in soil or a peat sand mix or peat perlite, because soil roots are different from water roots, and sometimes they go through a shock period if you take them from the water and then move them to soil. Not all plants have that shock, but some will. I imagine roses would be one of those.
Okay.
And they're also a shrub. They prefer to start in, although I know a hydroponic grower might argue with me, and I'd love to hear that side of it. Shrubs like to grow in soil.
Okay, Samantha, good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye. Mark in Westerville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Good morning. Good morning. Good to be on your program. I wanted to let your listeners know that the Columbus Bonsai Society will be having its 39th annual show this weekend at the Franklin Park Conservatory.
Good.
And anybody who's interested in bonsai is welcome to come and take a look. We'll be having at least 60 examples of bonsai on display, run by club members. We will also be having some demonstrations and workshops and three vendors. So if people are interested and inspired, they'll have the opportunity to shop for plants, pottery, supplies, and everything you could wish for as far as bonsai.
Mm. Okay. Thank you, Mark.
You're welcome.
Have fun.
We will.
Okay. I always pronounce them bonsai.
Well, no, that's what the airplane did in World War II, bonsai, before they went into into the aircraft carrier. It is bonsai. It's a long O, and it is hard for me sometimes not to correct people when they say bonsai, because I say, no, you're
I
not
would correct going people in. All the time. Everybody out there.
Yeah, it's bonsai, and some people look at me like I'm crazy, but I do it anyway. So, Mark, thank you for saying bonsai.
James in Columbus, welcome to the show, James.
Hi.
Hey. Hi, how you guys doing?
Real good.
Listen, I have a question for your wonderful guest, and I hope this applies, but I don't have a green thumb, but I've basically got Seymour in my front yard. You know, feed me, little shop of horrors.
Okay.
Oh. Cut of weeds, and I just want to know, how do I get rid of them, what really works, and what's the cheapest?
Okay, now you're talking about what kind of weeds? I'm not sure I understand.
They look long and prickly, and they have a little white flower on top.
So thistles?
Yeah, it sounds like a thistle. And they shoot straight up?
Yeah, they shoot straight up, and feed me, Seymour.
Yeah, well, I visualize. We're not talking dandelions here. No, we're talking Canadian thistle, it sounds like.
There you have several options. You can either pull them continually for about 2 to 3 years if you want to do it organically. Also, I have heard some people use fire, for you pyros out there, fire and industrial strength vinegar to kill the leading top. But you have to do that continually because the root of a Canadian thistle wants to send up new shoots constantly. Or you can poison them. There are some poisons on the market that can take Canadian thistle out. They are difficult plants to get rid of, and I would go to your local garden center and look for those options. I have gotten rid of thistle in gardens by pulling them continually after they get about 2 feet tall, after they spent some energy.
And after there's been a good rain or something,
right.
So they come right out.
Yeah, and get as much of the root as possible, and they're gone. In my vegetable garden, it was a sea of thistles, and I was able to completely get rid of them in 3 years.
All right, James, good luck with that weed.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
My wife did. Either the weeds or I go.
Great. Okay, we'll take care of those weeds, for heaven's sakes.
All right,
okay,
bye.
Take care. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News, and my guest is Deborah Kanapke, author and Ohio's Garden Sage. She's been on many, many times before. You know her, so if you have a question or comment for Deborah, give us a call, 614-292-8513. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org, and you can use our Facebook page as well, as did Rhonda. She writes, I have a new raised bed of tomatoes, which I built on the site of an old compost pile. The soil is a mix of compost, peat, and topsoil. I use no chemicals. My cherry tomatoes are prolific, but my slicing tomatoes have blossom end rot. Mm-hmm. Do you have any suggestions?
They need calcium, and there are tomato foods out there. Espoma makes one where I believe extra calcium is added, but you need a product to prevent that. Calcium is really important for cell development, for strong cell wall development, and what you have is the cell walls are bursting, and it's just blossom end rot is that sort of tough, scaly, I don't even know how to mention it. Now, you can cut that off, and the rest of the tomato
just pinch
is
okay. It off and...
Well, you can't pinch it
okay.
Because it's... The tomato itself is already formed, and you have that flat, sort of, it's like a scab on the bottom of the tomato.
Okay.
You can cut that off and eat it. I've done it, and I'm still here. But it is not sightly.
Why are the cherry tomatoes coming out fine, but these others aren't? Is there a difference in...
I'm not sure if they're all planted in the same area of the garden or if they're intermixed. They're... You know, since there's compost in there, I'm surprised that there is blossom end rot. But you know, if there's not enough calcium, that's a problem. The other thing could be maybe too much water. You can get blossom end rot because you're leaching out the calcium that's in there. And for some reason, I honestly can't tell you why the cherries are better. But I've noticed none of my cherries have ever gotten blossom end rot, but my slicing, my big ones have.
Okay.
That's
speaking of cherries, we have an email from Lori. She says we have a flowering cherry tree that is sick. After the recent storms we had, the leaves all turned brown. We Googled it and found that there is a disease that can affect cherry trees after high winds and extreme temperatures. What should we do to keep our tree alive? I guess it'd help kind of to know how old the tree is, maybe.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. So we're dropping leaves. I was writing a note to myself about.
After the recent storms, the leaves all turned brown.
All of the leaves?
It says that's...
Oh, my.
That's
pretty... That would be good to know how old they are, because if they're young trees, that could be devastating. Well, shoot, it could be devastating to any tree. Mm-hmm. Lose all of its leaves in the middle of July.
We just planted our Montmorency cherry tree last spring. And by the middle of the summer, the trees all went... The leaves did all go away, but we figured it was just shock. And it came back beautifully this year.
And so watch for a second flush of leaves. That's another, I'm going to have to look that one up too, because I don't know what you should be doing for care of this tree. I would not suggest excessive watering, because without leaves, the roots won't have anything to send the tree itself, the water out. Let me look that up, and please look at Facebook.
Okay, check out our Facebook page, Lori, the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page, and Deborah's really good about, to me, sometimes takes a day or two,
because
she actually looks things up and researches it. So you can check that out. An email from Tom: I wanted to ask you about belladonna, bittersweet nightshade. It can give you a rash worse than poison ivy or oak. I understand that the plant can also be deadly if ingested. It seems to be taking over this part of Ohio, and we have not had any luck getting rid of it. What should we do?
The birds love to eat the seeds and drop them, which is part of the problem.
Okay.
So anytime you see it, take it out. I've had it in my garden. I recognize the leaves, and it comes out immediately. But if you have a beautiful patch of it somewhere and the birds are eating the seeds, they will drop it in your garden as they feed on seeds or whatever in your garden. I haven't noticed it taking over, although I would imagine in waste spaces that is a pretty common weed. And yes, it is deadly if ingested. I've never had a rash from it, although... Anyone who is sensitive can get a rash from anything. It is in the potato tomato family and one of the poisonous ones. So the thing is pull it out, get rid of it, and wear gloves especially if you are sensitive.
Linda in New Albany, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Linda.
Hi, thank you. I had planted some rhododendron bushes on the north side of my home, in the backyard, close to the foundation of the house. They got very spindly and basically just didn't thrive. So I took them out and replaced them with some sort of a miniature lilac, probably a Miss Kim. And they're doing the same thing. Any suggestions?
Okay, you said you planted it close to the house. So that means it's under your overhang and not getting water from rain?
Well, they're being watered on a daily basis. I have an irrigation system, so they get watered each day. But they may also be getting maybe additional rainwater could be potentially coming off of the roof line.
Okay, so they're not under the overhang. They're out from it?
That's correct.
Okay. And you said they're getting water every day from your irrigation system?
They are. I'm a pop-up sprinkler probably for about 10 minutes a day.
Okay. This is what's happening.
Okay.
We've had high heat, and 10 minutes a day is fine for lawn, but it's not for shrubs. They need it of long duration, deep. What you've done is you've pulled all the roots up to the soil, and the high heat, the Miss Kim lilac does not like high heat at its root surface. I've noticed that in my own.
So you're making they don't have to go far to get water.
Yeah, the water's
so
right there.
Okay,
and so with the high heat, they're losing their roots and they're dying. They're shriveling. I would imagine the rhododendrons, the same thing was happening. Lawn watering, lawn irrigation systems are not good for shrubs and perennials, you know, for that timing. And every day for 10 minutes, it should be every third or fourth day for longer.
Linda, can you time it differently?
I definitely can. The one thing I would say, though, is that we've had this happening for probably over about a six-year period.
Okay.
So maybe it's more the watering issue than the heat.
Yeah, and definitely you're keeping all those roots right at the surface, which, like I said, for grass, that's what we do. But for trees, shrubs, perennials, annuals, that's not a good idea. So take a look at that and see if you can change that around.
That sounds like it makes a lot of sense. Thank you.
You're
all
welcome.
Right, Linda, thanks for the call. It's a great question. David and Bexley. David and Bexley, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. I just got some new blueberry and raspberry, what do you call them, bushes, I guess. That's what you want to talk about. Welcome to the show.
Right. Well, maybe it's not the right place to do this, but
oh, sure.
I've got these from the Franklin County Soil Conservation Service, and they weren't perfect to start with. They were a little rough looking.
Mm-hmm.
The problem I'm having is a couple of the blueberries are sprouting new sprouts. One of them isn't. And I was told to mound them up a little bit, which helps to drain off some of the water. And I used Hollytown, I think it's called, right?
Right, yeah, for acidification.
But I was also told that you need to do that long-term before you plant. So I don't know if they're acidifying or not.
Okay.
And also, should I use muracid or something like that?
What do you do?
Okay, first, calm down. Let me tell you about blueberries. First of all, in this high heat, they hate above 90 degree temperatures.
Huh.
That's first of all. Second of all, what they need is really well-drained soil. They're native to sandy areas, and we have clay. So what you have to do, that soil needs to be amended with a lot of compost. They're heavy eaters. I'm not sure this is organic, so don't tell on me. But I have used aluminum sulfate to get them started. And then I've carried on with Aspoma's Hollytone and a mixture of cottonseed and alfalfa seed meal, which are both acidifying. Plus, I use mulch. You have to keep the root zone cool on all of your fruit trees, berry bushes, etc. You need, and this is where I use straw, so it still breathes, but it's not direct sun baking the roots of your blueberries. And it sounds like, and you've noticed they're getting brown on the edge, that's heat related. And you cannot let blueberries dry out, but you cannot flood them. And that's where it's so important to have well-drained soil, but consistent moisture, not letting them dry out. Does that help?
David?
I feel like what I do is I water them directly, not with a hose. Then sometimes I also water them with a hose. But I've mounded them up, and the soil has a lot of organic matter.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a soil test. The soil test showed that there was no nitrogen, phosphorus, or potassium. It was just, I don't know what it is.
What
None?
Is it?
And you put compost in there?
Well, so, I did. I put compost in, and
I'm curious about the soil test, actually, but go on.
I thought the compost would help. And the compost, I've used a lot of that. Then I put some more on later. but they don't seem to be rooting real strongly. They seem to be kind of loose, mm-hmm. and when you water them, the water just kind of penetrates down through. It doesn't pond.
Well, and that shows that you have good drainage, which means you need to water them every third day, deeply and thoroughly, and water them until you see ponding. Water them until you see ponding, and then let that soak down. What we've had a very difficult season for blueberries, and usually they are watered by drip systems, so that it's a long period of water that goes deep,
okay.
and so the soil stays moist. If they dry out, the plants themselves dry out.
Should I continually use more compost?
Once it disappears, yeah, feel free to put more on.
Okay.
And put it around. In fact, make sort of like a little circle around it, and so that you can see when the water starts to pond.
Same way with raspberries?
With raspberries, compost is good. I don't put it right up to the stems. I keep it a little bit away.
Okay. And those seem to be doing better.
Yes. But they're totally different animal from blueberries.
Okay.
So to speak.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Thanks, David. Thanks for the call. My guest is Deborah Knapke, author and Ohio's Garden Sage. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
On the next Fresh Air, we find out if Aaron Sorkin speaks like his characters. His latest creation is The Newsroom, an HBO series with snappy dialogue reminiscent of Sorkin's hit The West Wing. And we find out what Keith Olbermann's got to do with it. Join us.
Fresh Air coming up in about 20 minutes at 12 noon here at 89.7 NPR News. Mostly sunny skies today with a high of 93 expected, 71 for an overnight low. Then on Tuesday, mostly sunny and a high of 94 degrees. Tuesday night, mostly cloudy, tomorrow night's low 76. By Wednesday, partly sunny with showers and thunderstorms, a good likelihood in the afternoon, and a high of 91. We have 88 degrees at our studios here on the Ohio State University campus.
On September 20th, 2004, WOSU-FM was granted a license by the Federal Communications Commission to serve the public interest as a public trustee until October 1st, 2012. Our license will expire on October 1st, 2012. We filed an application for license renewal with the FCC on June 1st of this year. A copy of this application is available for inspection during our regular business hours. It contains information concerning the station's performance over the last 8 years. Individuals who wish to advise the FCC of facts relating to our renewal application and to whether this station has operated in the public interest should file comments and petitions with the FCC by September 4, 2012. Further information concerning the FCC's broadcast license renewal process is available at 2400 Olentangy River Road, Columbus, Ohio, 43210, or may be obtained from the FCC, Washington, D.C., 20554. Or at www.fcc.gov.
My guest is Deborah Knapke, author, co-author of 5 books. Ohio's Garden Sage is her moniker?
Business name.
I don't know. It's just something, it's kind of catchy, is
yeah.
all. Anyway, she's here too. She teaches all about gardens and gardening, and is a consultant as well, a mm-hmm. blogger, so many things, and a grandma, as we mentioned earlier. She's with us today. If you have a question or comment for her, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we did want to just go back to Lori and talking about those rhododendrons and then the lilacs.
One thing about the lilacs that I was going to mention but got caught up in the root thing, on the north side of the house, they need more sun than that. And unless they're getting some east and west, and I don't know how your garden is, but they at least need a good 4 hours of sun. They wouldn't mind maybe having 5. But okay. You start going down to 2 hours, and they're just not getting enough. So just wanted to follow up on that.
Okay.
Thanks, Ann.
Speaking of lilacs, Lawrence and Pataskala, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Okay. I have a lilac bush out in our front yard by the road. And one of my buddies had hit the lilac.
Oops.
Okay.
That'll do it.
Ow.
And I'm wondering on how I can save the lilac.
Is it a big one?
No.
It's a little one. And yes. Hit it with what? A lawnmower or a car?
He hit it with a truck.
A truck. And what, okay, this, you know, this sounds like a car talk.
I'm actually impressed by his devotion.
I know, with click and clack, because if the lilac has a lot of broken branches, or, you know, you can cut those off and try to save the main part of it. But if it was smashed to the ground, I might suggest you visit your local garden center and get another. Not knowing how much damage was on the little shrub. I can't tell you if you can save it or not. So how damaged was it?
I have maybe one or two snapped branches.
Oh, that's not bad. So basically, prune it back to good, clean wood. Give it a good watering. Talk to it nicely. Say you won't let them run it over again. And next year it should be okay.
All right?
Okay.
All right, Lawrence. Good luck.
Good luck with that one.
Yeah. 614-292-8513 is the number to call if you have a question or comment. And Beth in Clintonville, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hi, Deborah. I just want to let you know I called up. I was a very nervous first-time gardener, and things have been going well.
Good.
Yeah, the tomatoes are finally growing some fruit, and was a little nervous there because I heard a guy saying from Iowa saying that he didn't think his eggplants or tomatoes were going to make it during the middle of the heat wave. I'm like, no.
Well, 100 degree temps, not much likes that. Cactus don't mind it, but
yeah. But I was out there watering, and I tried to get there even when the power is out, but I was with my folks. So the tomatoes have kind of grown into a tomato hedge.
Mm-hmm. Yep, they do that.
Yeah, and I'm staking them. I got some dowel rods. I've been re-trellising them. I've been doing all that stuff, and the eggplants are coming along nicely. I actually have spotted two baby eggplants along their way.
Oh, good.
So
far sounds good. So
yeah,
problem?
So what's the problem?
Yeah, I'm really happy. I just wanted to give you an update and also let people know when I had been weeding, there was this, you know, thing that I thought was a weed, but now I know it's not, that was just kind of taking over the whole yard. It looked like a ground cover, and it was, it almost looked like a little bit like a succulent, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the purslane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I had no idea that you could cook with it.
Yes, you can eat it. It's very delicious and nutritious.
And for Mexican stew, so I said to the guy at the farmer's market, okay, I won't throw it away next time.
Yeah.
So.
Wow.
Well, I'm glad to hear things are going well.
Yeah, I'll also take pictures and put them on your Facebook page or put them on Ann's Facebook page.
Yeah, do. Put a picture of that, what do you call
purslane.
It? Purslane. And put that on the Facebook page, Beth. I want to see what that looks like.
Okay.
You've seen it. You just don't know.
Yeah,
it.
I'm sure I have. I just want to know, can I eat it?
You'll be like, oh,
it's very crunchy.
Yeah, if I have something I can eat, then that's all good. So, all right,
well,
Beth,
thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Take care.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
On Facebook, Maureen says, my oak hydrangeas are really suffering this summer. One of them droops almost to the ground on hot days. How often should I water them? I've been turning the hose on them about once per week. Now, of course, you know, these are drama queens to me.
Mm-hmm.
They are just way over the
top. Well, the
top.
Oak leaf ones, though, aren't as bad as the other ones. And, you know, hydrangea paniculata is probably the most tolerant of heat and dryness. That's the panicled hydrangea. Limelight is a wonderful one. There's a whole vanilla strawberry, whole host of them. Great. Oak leaf hydrangeas, yeah, they've been suffering in this heat. Once a week, deep watering, that'll keep them holding on, but deep watering, not just whoosh, whoosh. This is where I would do small trickle, 20 minutes, then one side of the plant, 20 minutes on the other side of the plant, and let it go deep. And if you notice they're still flagging, then maybe do a third 20 minutes, that two times or one time a week that you're doing it. They're beautiful plants. They're worth saving. If they're really mature, sometimes, and I have a really mature one that's been flagging, I gave it 2 5-gallon buckets nice and slow. And while I was letting it go out, I was weeding around it. So that's, you know, right now we're just trying to beat the heat and the dryness. So good luck with that.
Mike in Columbus, you're on the air. Welcome to the show. Hello, Mike.
Oh, yes. I'm sorry. I heard a hiss and not a name, so forgive me.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. So, glad you're with us.
I don't know if this is you, but it's a job for me this week. And I've started this year doing composting using little red worms. And
yes,
that's been lots of fun and really helpful because we have a garden that has very little green stuff. So I can't really run an outdoor compost heap very effectively. But mm-hmm. with the power outage and then heat, it got too hot where I had the worms and they're gone. Mm. So I need to restart that whole thing. And so I wondered whether you had any tips on what are good locations. I'd had them in my garage, but that obviously got too hot. And so good locations, and whether I can use the residue from the now dead worms to go ahead and add on into the next, or I'll just go ahead and compost that and start from scratch. What thoughts do you have about that?
I have my worms in my basement. So, and there's an even temperature, 55 degrees, give or take. And when I have tried to do this outside, it usually gets too hot. And
yeah,
and same with the garage. So I use the basement. And I know one friend of mine actually had it in his kitchen. So Justin and Allison out there, they grow their worms in their kitchen, which is really convenient when you're just putting the coffee grounds in there.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
As to whether or not you can use the old... I probably would use that in the garden and start fresh.
Yeah,
just because
I think so.
I don't know if there would be any diseases or whatever in there. And besides, that's compost. It's ready for you to use. And, start all over again. Although I know some folks take half of that, start a new one, and then use half. So it's up to you.
Well, they're so easy to start again.
They are.
You know, just starting from scratch will only take a couple of weeks.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So,
okay.
Yeah,
great.
Have fun.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Mike. Rachel and Powell, you're on the air. Welcome to the show, Rachel.
Hi. You want me to start the explanation?
I sure do.
Well,
okay. We removed an aristocrat pear tree from the front of our house because it had been planted too close to the house. And we replaced it with a Japanese maple. And all this was done last fall.
Mm-hmm.
And now this summer, we are getting many, many little trees coming up from the original roots of the pear tree.
Mm-hmm.
That's
rootlings.
No longer there.
Mm-hmm. Rootlings.
Rootlings, yep.
Okay. Rootlings, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And in order to keep them under control, I'm pruning those at least twice a week. And it's a large, I mean, the roots were tremendous, apparently, because we have them going out. So is there any solution other than just pruning?
One of the suggestions or recommendations that I have read is that you let the water shoots get up about 1 to 2 feet tall and then chop them out. Just cutting them off, they still have eyes that they can grow at the very bottom, believe it or not. But take a sharp spade that you just sharpened and cleaned, and then just go there and give two chops on either side of it and lift them out. There's so much energy in those roots that they're just still growing. So you have to do more than just pruning because they're just coming from the side little eyes, the dormant eyes that are left after you prune the tops off. So you have to actually get some of that root out of there. So it means a little bit more work, but it's better than going out and pruning every 2 weeks. But let them get up about a foot, 18 inches, even 2 feet tall.
So they've invested some energy in it, and they'll be taking away a
That's
lot
right.
of that. Okay.
But you don't want them too big because then they're sending back more energy down.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. All right.
All right. Good luck, Rachel.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Take care.
Bye.
Sometimes I think we should be like the click and clack and then have people call back later, or we can call them back and
see
if how
it worked.
Did it work?
It didn't work at all.
Question from David. He says, I cut my raspberries to about 4 or 5 inches height last fall, and they have grown back to about 4 inches high. I guess grown back another 4 inches, but I'm not getting any fruit.
Wait, so they're only 8 inches tall?
Apparently.
Okay.
That's what it looks like here. Did I go wrong by cutting them back so low? Okay. My raspberry bush is like 3 feet high.
Yeah, they can get 3 to 6 feet tall, raspberries, the canes. And the question is, I mean, you don't necessarily want to take all of them down. You want to leave your first canes up and take your first year canes up and take your second year canes out, the old canes that don't fruit as well. And then it tends to, each grouping will send up more canes each year. I think you may have done a bit of disservice by cutting them all down, although some people recommend that. You know, it depends. There's an excellent sheet, fact sheet, the OSU Ohio Line fact sheets on growing your brambles, which is another word for the berries. And it will tell you all about the pruning that you should have done last fall.
Okay, so you should do it in the fall.
You take dead canes out at any time. I have also pruned after they fruit. You can prune in fall. You can prune in spring. Take a look at that fact sheet. There are the Ohio Line fact sheets, ohioline.osu.edu, I believe. And look up the one on raspberries and blackberries and brambles. So,
Mary in Hamilton, you're on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
I have a hydrangea, and I've had it about 6 years. It was a gift, and it was beautiful when I got it. It was 2 or 3 blooms. Well, I planted it, and the next year it got 1 bloom, and then it hasn't bloomed since. But it comes up, and it's beautiful. It's very lush and green and healthy looking, and then what am I doing or not doing?
Sounds like you might, was it a gift that someone bought like at a florist or grocery store, and it had really big leaves on it and still does, big sort of heart-shaped leaves?
I'd have to go look. I'm not sure how big it is.
But. Well, I'm guessing what you have is what's often called the florist hydrangea. And sometimes the flower buds or flower eyes die in them, especially if we have high heat. A lot of hydrangeas are not fond of high heat. That's not where they're from. So it may be a heat issue, but also what we have is what we call, a bud burst, a flower bud burst, or the eyes don't develop. So you get beautiful foliage plants, but you don't get flowering plants. So I'd have to know which one you actually have as to whether or not there's another issue. But I'm guessing that the flower buds are just blasting the stalks that make the buds.
I have the label off of it, but I didn't think I'd need it, so I didn't look it up. Okay. Well, I guess I should just not plant on blooms?
Yeah, enjoy it, or it could also be hydrangeas are hungry. You might want to give it more compost, more fertilizer. They, especially the big leaf ones, they want some help in the garden.
Like a bloom fertilizer?
A bloom fertilizer would work.
Acidifier.
Mm-hmm. They do like a more acidic soil. Now, you're in Hamilton. You're down by Cincinnati. So go to your local garden center, tell them your story, and they'll recommend something.
Okay, thank you.
All right, Mary.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for your call. Also, a clarification from David. The raspberries are 4 inches tall.
Oh,
currently.
My goodness.
So
sorry.
That's another story. That's just not enough. But Deborah Kanapke, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. Thanks to the All Sides staff, associate producer Amy Jurovich, All Sides intern Corinne Gleckler, All Sides volunteers Rachel Ramey and Andrew Sweet. Corinne Gleckler did produce the first hour of the program today. Thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming online at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, a service of WOSU Public Media.
Support for 89.7 comes from the Lancaster Festival, beginning a day early this year to welcome renowned pianist Misha Dichter in concert with the Lancaster Festival Orchestra on Wednesday, July 18th at 7:30. Details at lancasterfestival.org.